Welcome to the Legal Nurse Podcast, where you'll get tips to expand your legal nurse consulting skills. Every week, you'll hear from experts from within and outside the legal nurse consulting business. They'll share their knowledge to help you grow. Your show is moderated by Pat Iyer, a legal nurse consultant with over 30 years' experience. So join our community, sit back, relax, and get ready to learn. Here's your host, Pat Iyer.
Hi, welcome back to the Legal Nurse Podcast. This is your co-host, Kelly Campbell. Today's guest is Linda Katz-Wilner. We're in luck today. She is a communication specialist and a licensed speech and language pathologist. Her career began in healthcare and developed numerous communication training materials for non-native English-speaking professionals. Linda has worked with major hospital systems, physicians, nurses, and other allied health professionals. She is certified by the American Speech, Language, and Hearing Association. Welcome, Linda. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Kelly. It's nice to be here.
So tell us, what are you going to be teaching us today?
Thank you, Kelly. The way I look at communication is mastering and aligning the three V's of communication. The visual, how you look, the vocal, how you sound, and the verbal, what you say. And these three V's need to be in proper alignment or balance for us to come across with a polished professional presence, which is so critical for those of us who are in the legal world or public speaking, where we want to speak with credibility as well as professionalism.
Well, I'm ready to get started. So, are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right, let's do it. Get ready, audience. It's going to be a fun day. I think why we are so excited to hear and discuss with you today is we often encounter patients/clients that have different speech pathologies, different languages. So how did you transition from being a How did you transition from being a speech pathologist to concentrating on presentation skills?
Okay, these are very closely related in that I started, as you mentioned, in the hospital systems as a speech and language pathologist working with patients from all different problems, basically strokes, head and neck cancer, voice problems. And my experience in the hospital helped me become astutely aware to the communication breakdown that would happen between the doctors and nurses, the doctors and patients, the allied health professionals and doctors. And there were so many different issues going on, not just speech disorders, but like you had mentioned, different languages and different cultures. And I became very sensitive to that and started working more and more with communication skills, not pathology, not therapy. And I started working with a lot of people who are non-native speakers because, as you know, in the healthcare system, 25% of the doctors are non-native or international. And that sets the stage for a lot of miscommunication. So I started developing training materials in this area. And what happened is I started realizing that this isn't just in healthcare, or although in healthcare it's life-threatening when there are communication breakdowns, but it's in the business world as well. And I started then working with other people who are looking to improve their speaking skills, not just in accent, but maybe having them sound more credible or having a professional presence. So it all really works together. And now I really work with anybody who has communication issues, be it their voice, their accent, their pronunciation, their confidence, their credibility.
Well, what we would like to learn today, that when I say we, I mean our audience, is as legal nurse consultants, life care planners, we are often asked to not just present to our attorney clients, but we are often asked to be an expert witness. So can you tell us more about the work you've done with witnesses or expert witnesses to prepare them for court?
Sure. Most of my experience has been with international physicians who are involved in malpractice cases. And so in that situation, an attorney recognized the need for this physician to speak well during the deposition. Because as you probably know, many malpractice cases are related to a communication breakdown between the healthcare provider and the patient. And when that breakdown is there, trust gets disrupted, and then we start to have legal ramifications. So they felt that if the physicians worked with me and I helped them speak in a clear, confident manner, that's going to help with their credibility and hopefully help their case. So that's most of my experience directly with healthcare providers involved in litigation. But it would be the same for anybody I work with, whether it be a nurse, whether it be just another witness who may not be in healthcare, that there are certain things that we need to work on to make sure that they are credible and likable, because that's another factor as well.
Oh, yes. So I guess my take-home point from that little segment of our conversation is clear and confident and likable.
Absolutely.
Okay. I guess part of that comes down to the quality of your voice, you know, leading into that, why is that important when you're testifying?
Okay, that's an excellent question. And let's first look, Kelly, at what we mean by quality, because quality of voice could be, do I have a breathy voice when I'm speaking? You know, or do I have a really harsh voice? And that may affect my likability or credibility. It could also be the pitch of my voice. Do I have the up talk? And if I talk like this and I'm making statements like this, I don't sound very confident. And so when we talk about quality, it could be the pitch. It could be the loudness. It could be the harshness. It could be any of these areas, or just how well do I project my voice? Or do I speak in a monotone and sound completely bored and disinterested in what you're asking me? Or do I sound too perky? And the perkiness may take away from my credibility or my experience because I may sound too youthful if I speak like this. And so we have to modulate the way the quality of our voice to sound more credible and sound more experienced so that our information is very believable.
Oh, okay. Can we dissect this a little bit more? So, confidence. When, sorry, audience, I think you're getting used to me going back and just clarifying a little bit more. So, when you say confidence, speaking with confidence, we want to not end with an inflection in our voice. So, we don't want to make it seem like we're questioning ourselves, kind of like what I'm doing right now.
Yes. And when you said inflection, let's clarify that. We don't want to end with an upward inflection as if it's a question, especially if it's a statement. So if you asked me a question, what time did this happen? And I said, oh, it was reported at 3 o'clock. That doesn't sound confident. But if I said, it was reported at 3 o'clock. Okay. You don't need to ask me anymore. You know that's the answer. But when my voice goes up, you feel like, I'm assuming, you feel like I'm not finished with what I'm saying or I'm not sure what I'm saying. And the same would go along with saying who I am. In the beginning of most interviews, you ask the person who they are. And if I said, my name is Linda Katz Wilner, that's very different from, my name is Linda Katz Wilner. That way, I would sound confident. Mm-hmm. And so that's where, yes, you're right. The inflection is important, but it's a downward inflection so that I'm making a statement rather than making it sound like a question like I just did.
Okay. All right. So I have that point. The next one that I wanted to question you about was the monotone voice. And this happened, I don't think I do this, but I recall seeing a different expert witness talk very monotone. And you're right. I thought, is he bored with the questioning or is it almost came across as condescending, like he was just not being, not that you want to make it seem like he's being challenged, but the jury, I didn't know how they perceived that monotone type voice.
And you're touching on something very interesting, Kelly, because you mentioned condescending. So that may not even be just monotone voice talking like this. It could be that tone of voice. Maybe somebody sounds very defensive the way they're speaking, the way I'm talking right now. That's not a very friendly voice. Now, it could be the person's defensive. It could be the person is nervous. When we get nervous, we restrict our pitch variability. And so we basically start talking like this. If we're drawing from memory or had memorized a statement, then it starts to sound very monotone. You know, the type of voice when you're listening to a telemarketer and you know they're reading from a script.
Right.
That is the voice that's not credible. It feels rehearsed. And I don't think you want your expert witnesses to sound rehearsed. You want them to sound like they're conversing and giving information that's in real time, not just running through this whole script that they rehearsed before they got up to give their testimony.
Oh, key point, audience, conversing, not memorized. Of course, we need to understand and have certain points memorized, but the key point is conversing. You're so right. So right.
And Kelly, can I add something to that? If you have notes that you're practicing, and I don't know if you're using the notes if you're as the expert witness, but if you have notes, do not write complete sentences because you'll have the tendency to just read what's there and lose the dynamic aspect of conversing. If you need bullet lists or just some points to help jog your memory, that would be fine, and that will allow you to talk more than memorize.
Okay. Yes, that's a great point. Thank you. Yeah, I think every expert witness does it a little bit different. I prefer to take up the whole chart just in case they ask me a question and I need to refer back. Mm-hmm. You know, I hear different points of whether that's right, that's wrong, but I want it available.
You said a chart, and so a chart you may not tend to read a lot from if it's something visual, but if you wrote a script, it's hard, and especially if you're nervous, it's hard to step away from that script. And so
right.
You may get sucked into it and start reading and lose all the interaction you have with the person who's speaking with you.
Right. So bullet points, just highlights. That's
mm-hmm.
Okay. Great. So when we go up there, we know or we think we could be up there 15 minutes, cross fingers, if we're lucky, not so lucky. Or we could be up there for 3-4 hours. What can we do to protect our voices, our nerves, so they don't deteriorate? Any suggestions?
Before we continue with the show, I wanted to share a resource loaded with tips for developing powerful presentations. Get more in-depth knowledge about presentation techniques from my colleague Stephanie Scotti by investing in a webinar that she did with me, Pat Iyer, called Accelerate Powerful Presentation Strategies. Stephanie makes her living teaching presentation skills. She's part of the mastermind that I run for professional speakers. In this online training, Stephanie focuses on how to most effectively present your message. LNCs have so much to share with attorneys. When you're asked to make a presentation at a prospect or client's office or at an attorney conference, would you know the best way to begin? Would you know how to most effectively engage your audience, deliver your message, and connect with the decision makers? Would you like to master powerful presentation strategies that help you achieve relaxed self-confidence? Would you like to ace your presentation and gain more credibility and clients? Get the on-demand replay of this webinar at http://lnc.tips/accelerate. That link is http://lnc.tips/accelerate. And use the code LISTEN to get a 25% discount off the price.
I have so many suggestions. For nervousness, the first question is, what do you do about nervousness before, right? Because you're probably nervous, or some people are nervous before they get started. Breathing is essential, right? Just to make sure you're breathing in and out. We hold our breath, and we have a shallow breath when we're nervous, and we have that fight or flight response. So we're not breathing that well. We're not breathing enough to even think clearly. So breathing is important, even beforehand. Doing exercise ahead of time, walking a flight of steps, sometimes dissipates some of those jitters that we may feel when we're nervous. And the other point is how we frame it. Know that nervousness is part of it, and using that energy can help us perform. We don't want to be completely laid back, because then we don't have energy when we're talking. So those are some of the things to do for nervousness. And be sure that you're not, and we'll probably get into this, but not displaying it visually with wringing your hands or playing with a pen or tapping something, because that's letting somebody know we're nervous. So I think ahead of time, that's important. You also asked me, what if you end up being there 3 to 4 hours? I certainly hope you have a glass of water there or something to drink. So you have that to keep hydrating your voice, and you can take a pause, and it gives you an opportunity to stop for a moment. Another thing to do is pause. Don't feel you need to speak every moment. Sometimes people give too much information when they're nervous, and it's
too much.
It's overload for the listener, and sometimes we step into tricky territory if we talk too much. So my recommendation is take the pauses, have a drink of water. That can settle you down a little bit. And I'll give you one trick that I love. When we get nervous, what happens to our saliva? It dries up, right? And we feel like cotton mouth and we can't even talk. And nobody would see you doing this, if you gently bite the side of your tongue while your mouth is closed, you actually secrete more saliva. And so if you don't have that glass of water there, but you feel so dry that you can't even talk, gently bite on the side of your tongue. Don't do it too hard, but bite, and you'll feel that you have saliva and it lubricates your mouth and makes it easier for you to talk.
I have never heard that before in my life. How about that? As you were telling me this, I'm biting my tongue. I wonder how many people are driving to work right now biting their tongue. Oh my gosh. Okay. All right. And you know, one other thing I do is I am not hesitant to look at my paperwork. And here's why. Attorneys don't go to and sit and not look at their notes. Mm-hmm. We don't have to have, like you said, we don't have to have everything memorized.
Right. And we don't sound right if it's memorized. And so that's the bigger reason. Right. We want to sound in the moment and talking to somebody, not that we've been coached to say something, because then it doesn't sound like it's coming from our mouth.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. So the next question on our list. Is it really possible to eradicate an accent? And do you really need to?
Okay, I'm glad you added that to the question. Why would we want to? My thought, first of all, we embrace the diversity, especially in the United States. There are so many different cultures. Accent becomes a problem when we don't understand somebody. And in that case, we don't need to eradicate it. We need to modify it so that the person is understood the first time. Now, let me give you some reasons why, especially in healthcare, we need to address accents. If I were a doctor and I were telling the nurse what the prescription is, and I said it's 50 milligrams, do you know if I'm saying 50 milligrams or 15 milligrams? And the difference is how I'm stressing the syllables of that number. Now, years ago, we had many problems in healthcare because of that. Now we have to write things down, and there are different ways to compensate for it. But think of the doctor on the phone talking to the nurse, who both maybe even have accents. Things like that become problematic. So it's important to know the American stress patterns when you're speaking English. Another example is the doctor who may ask if the person is breathing or bleeding, and they don't know the difference of which one the doctor is saying. That's going to affect the trust and the quality of care of that patient and possibly result in litigious consequences or life-threatening consequences. Another example is if the nurse, and I've heard this before, a nurse may be talking to a family member and she's from another country, and she may say, it's the patient's hot. And it's like, why does it matter that the patient's hot? What she actually meant was it's the patient's heart. But because of an accent, those words are said differently. They're not wrong, they're said differently. But yet, in the American healthcare system, that's going to be a problem. So we do need to address accent when it interferes with proper care and can result in very negative consequences if communication does break down.
Thank you for clarifying. You know, we had briefly discussed things, and this is where things get mistranslated, were reading versus voice communication. It's so clear now what I was trying to ask you and why it's important. Yes.
And let me add to that, Kelly, that everybody has good intentions. Everybody is trying to communicate effectively. They may just not have the tools and the rhythm patterns to do it. So these are aha moments. And let me give you another example, because we are talking about healthcare. I had a doctor who said to me that when she was working in New York, she had no problems, but when she moved to the Midwest, they didn't understand each other. When she was saying things to the nurses. And she was once talking about a patient who had a pee, and they thought, okay, let's get the urinal. What she was actually saying is the patient had a PE, a pulmonary embolism. But because she didn't know how to stress acronyms or initializations, which are filled, we say so many of them in healthcare, because she didn't know you stress the last letter like PE, they thought she was saying P. So it's somewhat amusing, but it's a problem when that happens. Or if you say somebody had a CVA rather than a CVA. And so learning those patterns of American English are critical to communicating effectively in healthcare as well as in all businesses, but you can see where healthcare presents a greater, more life-threatening problem.
Absolutely. And, you know, specific to being on the witness stand, you know, some of us travel and are in different regions with different accents. It will be important to speak clearly.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yes. Okay. So that being said, what tips do you have recommend for concerning body language? You had briefly mentioned, you know, not talking too much with your hands. Mm-hmm. What else can we do to enhance our credibility?
Okay. For credibility, the first thing they look at is how are you sitting? Because I'm assuming you're sitting, not standing. But how are you sitting? How is your posture? Are you engaging? Are you leaning back, which is very passive, or are you leaning towards the person speaking to you, which is more engaging? Right? Are your shoulders hunched over, or do you have good posture? So when I'm saying leaning forward, I don't mean get round-shouldered. I mean tilting so that you're leaning towards the person. What are your hands doing? If you're wringing your hands or fidgeting, that's going to show that you're nervous. If you're pointing to somebody, that's very accusatory. Use your open hand to point. In fact, let people see your hands. So you said don't gesture too much, but don't hide your hands either. You can use your hands, and the open palm is much more inviting than pushing your hands out like you're saying stop. Can you visualize what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So if the hands are open, it's welcoming. And you can gesture. Keep your fingers together. You seem more in control than your fingers dancing around and becoming chaotic. Think about your facial expression. Smile if it's appropriate, not if you're delivering very negative news. But try to make your facial expression appropriate and practice in front of a mirror to see if you do that. By all means, make eye contact. Look at the person when you're talking because that makes you the most credible. If you're averting your eyes, they start to wonder, does she really believe what she's saying? Or is she confident with what she's saying? So I don't want to look down. I don't want to look up to the ceiling. I want to look at the person. But if you need to look at your notes, by all means, look down, but don't talk while you're looking at your notes. Glance down and then look up again to talk to the person or people who are asking you the question. It's a lot of things to think about, isn't it?
Yes. Yes. Confidence will speak volumes. I'm just trying to recap what all. I think the number one thing is if there's no glass of water available, bite the side of your tongue. I'll just never forget that one. But confidence will speak volumes. Smiling, articulation.
Eye contact.
Eye contact.
And can I add one more thing?
Oh, please do. Please do.
Some of the things, I told you what you should do, but here's some things you should not do. If you worry about your voice or clearing your throat a lot, by all means, before you get up to talk, avoid milk products. Avoid products with a high acid content, especially if you have reflux. And so, I mean, don't have tomato sauce or pizza before you have to talk because you may find yourself clearing your throat. Even though some research says, oh, milk products don't make you clear your throat, they make me clear my throat, and I can only go by that. So those are things you want to stay away from. Stay away from a lot of caffeine because you will be jumping out of your chair. By the same token, don't drink a lot of alcohol before you do this. And think about foods like nuts and popcorn, which you might cough on ahead of time. We have coughing jags from some of those foods. So if you have that ahead of time and have a coughing jag, it's going to affect your voice when you're speaking. Okay. So just be aware of some of those and take good care of your voice and make sure you're hydrating with water, not caffeine and not alcohol. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Well, this has been so informative. Thank you so very much. How can our listeners follow you or learn more from you?
Sure. I have a website, which is successfully-speaking.com. And I have many videos on the topics that we just discussed. I have an entire video library with some of these soft skills on speaking skills, body language, a lot of nonverbal communication, how to speak succinctly. And on the website, I also have some other programs, a Master Your Professional Presence, where you can purchase a series of 9 modules of skills to master that professional presence to use in all different aspects of your life. I offer 15-minute consultations through GoToMeeting, where I can meet with somebody or just a phone call and talk to them and answer questions that they might have. So there are many opportunities, and I have a monthly newsletter. All of that's available on the website. If you go there, you can access all of the different things I'm talking about.
Okay. Can you tell us the website again, just so that we can write it down again?
We assume it's www.successfully-speaking.com.
Wonderful. Thanks so much for joining us today. All right, listeners, join us again next week, and don't forget to share us and join us. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And I've got a phenomenal resource for you just waiting on LegalNurseBusiness.com. My online training and books are designed to help LNCs discover ways to strengthen their skills and their businesses. Check them out at LegalNurseBusiness.com. Many of us are lifelong learners who enjoy the chance to keep expanding our knowledge, just like the Book of the Month clubs, my membership site, lnceu.com, gives you 2 online trainings every month. We have a yearly payment plan that saves you over $50 compared to paying monthly, and each program is hugely discounted. Look at the options at lncu.com. And my last website, the lncacademy.com, is the coaching program I offer to a select number of LNCs. You get my personal attention and mentorship so that you can excel and build a strong foundation for your LNC practice. Get all the details at lncacademy.com.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Check out Pat Iyer's resources for legal nurse consultants on legalnursebusiness.com. Pat coaches legal nurse consultants so they make more money, get more clients, and avoid expensive mistakes. Check out her coaching program at lncacademy.com. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave a review on iTunes. We always are interested in your ideas for new topics. Please leave a comment on legalnursepodcasts.com. Join our community and get notified of each new episode and receive the transcript of today's program. Complete the request form on legalnursepodcasts.com. We appreciate you and your interest.